H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A House committee has taken up the mega bill after it passed the Senate with Vice President J.D. Vance casting the tie-breaking vote. It follows a marathon session and party infighting over massive cuts to programs like Medicaid to pay for tax breaks for the wealthy. President Trump getting closer to finalizing his domestic agenda.
President Trump on social media said there's much to be proud of after the Senate narrowly passed his tax and budget bill. The president urged House Republicans to come together, saying they have to ignore their, quote, occasional grandstanding standards and do the right thing and pass the legislation and get it to his desk by July 4th. Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
In New York City, jurors in the Sean Diddy Combs sex trafficking trial have sent a sixth note to the judge since starting deliberations yesterday. Volatile storms impacting airports on the East Coast for a second day. More than 900 flights, according to FlightAware, have been canceled nationwide just today. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Governor Tony Evers and the Republican-controlled state legislature have tentatively agreed to a number of key provisions for the next biennial budget. The agreement includes a $1.3 billion income tax cut targeting the middle class, an over $250 million increase in funding for the universities of Wisconsin, a $500 million funding increase for K-12 special education programs, and $200 million for transportation projects. It also notably includes $330 million for child care programs. AAA says one of the busiest holiday travel seasons of the year is already underway. AAA of Wisconsin officials say they expect nearly 1.5 million residents to hit the roads this week, with another nearly 60,000 hopping on a flight and over 100,000 using other means of transportation like trains and buses. The nearly 1.5 million drivers would be a 2.5% increase over last year's July 4th travel season. Officials are also advising residents to plan ahead for extra traffic and drive carefully through Sunday evening. The developers of a solar energy production project in Polk County say the facility is set to begin operating this year. National Grid Renewables broke ground on the Apple River Solar Project last November. Officials say the 100-megawatt facility will be able to power about 26,000 homes and offset nearly 130,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions. They also expect the facility to provide about $36 million in direct economic impact and $10 million in new tax revenue in the region over the next 20 years. A pair of Tamarack Health nurses have been recognized with the Rural Health Ambassador Award from the Rural Health Cooperative. Erica Kurtz, an emergency room registered nurse at Ashland Medical Center, was recognized for training staff and local paramedics with advanced cardiovascular life support and her work with medical tents at community events. Christine Stark, a family birthplace nurse manager at Hayward Medical Center, was recognized for 35 years of service in a rural setting. The awards are meant to honor healthcare workers who go above and beyond in rural communities. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
A whole new Bucks team. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA Free Agency. After two seasons, the Milwaukee Bucks have waived Damian Lillard. He's recovering from that torn Achilles tendon. He'll be paid $22 million a year in dead money over the next 5 years to make up his contract with the Bucks. The Bucks then signed Indiana Pacers free agent center Miles Turner to a four-year deal worth $107 million. He's 29 years old. He'll replace Brook Lopez, who's headed to the Clippers on a two-year contract. In another move, the Bucks have traded guard Pat Connaughton and two future second-round picks to the Charlotte Hornets. They pick up 31-year-old guard Vasilije Micic. He's Serbian and may be headed back to play in Europe. The Bucks also signing an 11-year veteran guard, Gary Harris, from the Orlando Magic to a two-year deal. So again, the Bucks saying goodbye to Damian Lillard. They signed the Pacers center Miles Turner to a four-year deal with Sports on Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, maybe a stray storm, a high in the mid-80s. And upper 80s on Thursday, another slight storm chance. A couple of storms around for the 4th of July, and temps in the upper 80s and muggy. It's 82 right now.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening.
You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein into the studio. And the 4th of July is fast approaching, so we talk fireworks. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everyone, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your host, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for joining us on yet another steamy afternoon across the state of Wisconsin with lots of steamy news for you today. We've got the state biennial budget. We've got the big, brutal bill getting a vote in the Senate, a tie vote with the vice president breaking that tie. We've got some action on RFK's approach to vaccinations and overall public health, getting a big decision from a federal court today. We're going to cover all of that. I've got a fabulous expert guest here to help me explain some of the Supreme Court's rulings of this past week that were incredibly impactful about what lays in the future for us as citizens. His name is Jim Santel. He'll be with me through this entire show. And Jim and I are very pleased to welcome State Senator and ranking member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTonya Johnson. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Senator. Thank you for making time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us what happened this afternoon in the JFC. What was the vote and what are we looking at in the state's biennial budget?
Well, today we had an opportunity to vote on the finalized budget. A lot of negotiations went into this budget, especially on the Democratic side. We were invited to the table fairly late in terms of leadership, but our input made a world of difference in trying to make sure that this budget did as little harm as possible, and we were able to get some good things for the citizens of Wisconsin. So this isn't the budget that we would have chose to create being a Democrat, but we definitely played a part in making sure that the budget was as palatable as possible.
Tell us about some of those improvements over both the current biennial budget and where Republicans, as led by Senator Lemieux and Assembly Speaker Voss, had offered as sort of a response to the governor's introduced budget.
So one of the major differences where we played a pivotal role was childcare. We know that the governor proposed $480 million for childcare accounts. We know that we were at risk of losing almost 88,000 slots if childcare providers closed their doors. So we were instrumental in getting more than $300 million to keep childcare centers open. It won't be called child care counts, and that's okay. The name isn't important, But we were successful in making sure that we got $110 million in monthly payments to childcare providers for basic operating costs, such as payroll and rent. $66 million for a new state-funded program called Get Kids Ready. And that's designed for four-year-olds, putting those kids, some of those kids, allowing them to be served in daycare centers so they don't have to be pulled out and put into the K-4 programs, but making sure that they're still school ready. And also, one of the most important things that I'm most proud about is raising the childcare rates to the 75th percentile, which is required by state law anyways. But that's essentially giving childcare providers a raise across the board for the kids that they're caring for, which is extremely important in keeping their doors open. We played a pivotal role in making sure that reimbursement rates were raised for special needs children. Our state Republicans stopped at around 35%. With negotiations between Democrats, we were able to raise those rates to 42% in the first year, 45% in the second. Another thing that we were able to do, instead of $80 million in cuts for the UW system, we're now investing $256 million over the two-year period in the UW systems, making sure that they're able to stay afloat. So we were able to do some really, really pivotal things in making sure that this budget did the least amount of harm as possible.
Folks, if you're just joining us, the big news out of the state of Wisconsin is that the Joint Finance Committee has approved a biennial budget. Senator, you are the only Democrat sitting on the Joint Finance Committee to vote for this biennial budget. And I think it's incredibly important. Again, these three areas of critical funding, childcare, special education reimbursement rates, and of course, the UW system funding. The UW system funding swing alone, again, going from $80 million in cuts to $256 million in additional investment, that's $336 million in swing, plus that additional $300 million for childcare, those reimbursement rates for special education across the public school system. If you can, again, we're seeing tweets coming out from Chris Larson, Francesca Hong in opposition. Can you address some of those criticisms of the budget? And can you address some of your colleagues on the Joint Finance Committee from the Democratic Party voting against this biennial budget?
Yes, like I said before, this is not a budget that we would have chose to introduce had we been allowed to play a more pivotal role. Since being elected to the state legislature since 2013, being able to vote for a portion of this budget or just having the opportunity to vote for this budget was extremely important because this budget, out of all of the budgets that I've witnessed, truly has a bipartisan stamp on it. Before, it was just the governor and key players on the Republican side crafting the budget. But when those talks broke down and they were at a standstill, then Democratic leadership was invited to the table. These are truly items that we fought for. We had to go and make a decision on what areas would most impact our constituents and the constituents around Wisconsin, regardless of what party that they're from. And I can honestly say that we help to make a bad budget better. And sometimes, you know, in leadership, that's all that you can hope for or ask for. And in terms of being a leader, sometimes when bipartisan efforts are made, then you have to vote for that on behalf of just the sheer intent. We finally had an opportunity to actually contribute and to actually get something in the budget, and that was worth my vote for this bill. It's not a perfect bill. It never will be when you are operating on true bipartisanship. You know, it was said in Joint Finance that every single budget that they introduce has been a bipartisan effort, and I don't necessarily agree with that, right? The governor signs the budget, true, but But we all know what happens if he doesn't sign the budget. You have vulnerable communities and neighborhoods and schools that are relying on those funds and relying on that the budget to be passed. And if it's not passed, you know, and we're allowed to break for the summer, there's no rush to come back and start over. But yet those communities and the schools still suffer. And so because of that, Governor Evers realizes that, you know, the path of least resistance and to make sure that those vulnerable communities don't suffer is to sign the budget. This time we had an opportunity to provide a lot more input, and it showed at the end with all of the things that we were able to accomplish.
If I can be so bold, Senator Johnson, as to make this observation, the Democrats that have seen coming out in opposition with Representative Hong as an exception to this, white folks, right? And I think there needs to be an observation which you made, I think, quite expertly, and that is communities facing the most acute harms at greatest risk. We have to be attuned to and to understand that sometimes in negotiated bipartisan solutions, the harm reduction needs to be emphasized and elevated as opposed to comparing what is and what is possible to what we would wish for. That is not the delta. The delta is, the difference is, how much harm was going to happen with no budget or with a budget under significant delay. And I think we may have just lost the senator. We're going to work to get her back. Jim, I'm going to pivot to you a bit here. I have been through budget negotiations. I was at the county and working with our city counterparts during the sales tax negotiations just a couple of years ago. And I watched Democrats, frankly, that were a bit left, perhaps some very far left, oppose these compromise solutions on largely ideological grounds, based off the failure to achieve perfection. Mm-hmm. And again, I heard from a lot of elected Black leaders, hey, you do not understand the harm that may befall some of our most at-risk communities. I applaud elected officials that take these tough votes, that do not let the perfect stand in the way of the good. Your thoughts on the state's biennial budget?
Absolutely. And so that those folks who come forward and say, we've got to be thoughtful about what's going on right down the street, right? Those operations that are affecting people. And if you place this ideological position above everything else, people are not served. The interests of the community are not addressed. And the other thing that I would say in following up on the senator's very good comment, and she's back with us now, is you and I both know, all of us know, if everybody leaves a room in litigation and even in legislation, everybody's a little bit unhappy, you probably have a settlement that's going to last and make some sense. And you can also, Senator, as you just said, you can explain that to people, as you just did. You're confronted by others of all parties and asked about your vote. You can explain the reasons, the practical reasons for doing it. Everybody leaves a little bit unhappy. We can't get everything we want in a good democratic system. That's your point, right, Senator?
Correct. It is. There were some things there that were really hard pills for me, such as the increased daily rates for Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. Before, we thought that those were going to be $840,000 per juvenile offender per year, it's $912,000 for the first year. And the second year is $1.6 million. So there was some really, really poor decision-making and spending in this budget, but there were a lot of really good things to applaud as well.
As I hear you, State Senator LaTanya Johnson, we need to educate, not incarcerate. That has the largest return on a taxpayer dollar. I applaud you for your leadership, for the tough vote, for the tough negotiations. What do you want to say to Wisconsinites that might have reservations? We've got just about 30 seconds left, Senator.
I want to say that this is a proven record right here that when we work together, we're able to accomplish things for taxpayers. And this was a clear indication of bipartisanship. Nobody got everything that they wanted, but we did. We were forced to come to the table, sit down, and make some tough decisions. And that was what was most important.
You're accomplishing here. Much in the way of childcare, special education, and our university system. Congratulations, Senator LaTanya Johnson. for your leadership in what was a grueling budget debate. We'll be back. Jim Santel and I discuss more right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to thank my co-host for the rest of today for being the guest host on this very program on Friday. Also, big thanks to my colleague, Matt Rothschild, for sitting in the guest host chair for me yesterday. Matt's going to also be here on July 3rd. We have a very special pre-July 4th celebration here on the Maggie Dawn for you schedule Maggie Dawn Show scheduled for tomorrow, July 3rd. Do not miss tomorrow's show. We take a brief break, if you will. We look past with a historian from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We observe our present with Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin, Madison, a political scientist. And then we look forward with a media expert and another political scientist from the University of Wisconsin, Madison, about how do we talk about these things? How do we build bridges? How do we actually reach the compromise that State Senator LaTanya Johnson just discussed with us? Big thanks to the senator for being here. Again, she ticked off a couple of huge, I'm going to call them enormous improvements over the budget that the GOP or the MAGA regime here in the state had proposed, again, to summarize, that includes $300 million for childcare, reimbursement rates that will finally get above the 40% mark, reaching 45% for special education funding here in the state. Instead of $80 million in cuts to the UW system, $256 million of additional investment, making for a $336 million swing. And the one thing that we weren't able to get to with the senator is that there is increased funding for Medicaid in this budget compromise. The increases, those increases will go to help hospitals pay to fund their Medicaid patients. Again, it increases the amount hospitals pay to the state to help fund Medicaid payments, but raising the percentage of their net patient revenue. So this is incredibly important. That fact, the Medicaid improvement, may be so critical in light of the big brutal bill's passage in Washington, D.C. What an odd irony, Jim, that we're looking at the big brutal bill's passage in the Senate. Of course, now the House has to deal with the differences between the big brutal bills that each chamber adopted. But what an irony that the day that our U.S. Senate adopts the big brutal bill with a vice presidential tie-breaking vote, on the same day that our Joint Finance Committee here in Wisconsin passes our biennial budget.
Right. We've got a 50-50 vote in the United States Senate. How fascinating as an historical matter. Vice President comes in and casts the deciding vote. Not surprising, but talk about eking something out. And again, Maggie, to your good points about the content of what's going on in that federal bill as opposed to the state bill, Medicaid, we're seeing, again, huge cuts with respect, and the federal system with respect to medical coverage for people in America, millions of people here. Again, not an easy thing. We always have to struggle through these issues, but the possibility here of doing something positive in an area where our federal government may soon be cutting back, and that will have an impact upon the state of Wisconsin. Here, our budget, as the senator was saying, as you were recounting, making some real percentage changes there that are going to have an impact upon health care in Wisconsin. To the good. May not be the 110% good that everybody was hoping for, but that's what compromise is all about. And I could not agree with you more that we need to be supportive of and even laud the people, including the senator and others, who look at this and say, okay, I can go back to my constituents and I can explain what I have done. And I've got you don't even have to describe it as the best thing I could possibly get. I advocated for this. We've got a good deal here. And maybe not great, but we've got a good deal here, and it's going to inure to the benefit of Wisconsinites.
Well, and first of all, let me just say, from a procedural perspective, folks, if you're wondering what comes next, the full legislature has to take a vote tomorrow. If it passes tomorrow, Corey, I think it is passable without Democrat. I know it's passable without Democratic support. I think there will be some Democratic support for it, as State Senator Johnson's vote from the JFC indicated. Again, that vote, the full legislature, tomorrow, Wednesday. The governor then has 10 days to decide how he's going to wield his partial veto powers and or sign the budget using those partial veto powers. The governor's office has said those elements of the biennial budget that were negotiated, that were compromise solutions, he will not use his partial veto powers on. So again, something to keep watch of here. Another thing that Senator Johnson pointed out to us is that if this budget is not signed, meaning our state's biennial budget, prior to the federal budget reconciliation bill being signed by President Trump, the state could lose somewhere in the ballpark of $1.1 million. Now, again, in the grand scheme, not a huge deal, but that's still $1 million for, again, healthcare in Wisconsin. So there is some time pressure here. Again, a negotiated solution. Jim, we got into this briefly, but I want to ask again, having been in rooms when I have watched Democrats and Republicans negotiate highly contentious fiscal issues, I have always been appalled by both the far right and the far left's penchant for what I'm going to call the easy vote that appeases the base. I object because other people will take the tough votes and actually get the thing done.
Right.
I think it's frankly kind of a cop out.
It is, and it works on a campaign poster then, right? I'm the one who voted for you. What is the impact of that? Well, I didn't vote for something practical once again, and I wasn't the guy who took some lumps also for doing just that. That's the problem.
The poetry of campaigns versus the prose of actual governance. Again, congratulations to Senator LaTanya Johnson and Governor Evers for getting us forward on this budget. Stay tuned. Jim and I dig into the Supreme Court next.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin's Natural Resources Board has approved new white-tailed deer hunting rules for the 2025-2026 seasons. The new rules were agreed upon after receiving input from individual county deer advisory councils, residents, and the Department of Natural Resources. The Natural Resources Board approved a statewide kill quota of over 291,000 antlerless deer, a 7% increase over the last hunting season. The board also approved holiday gun hunt and extended bow seasons in three additional counties this year. On Monday, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources announced that a sharp-tailed grouse hunt will be held for the first time since 2018. According to a press release, the hunting season will be held from October 18th to November 9th. Interested hunters can apply for entry into a limited drawing lottery until August 1st. DNR officials say years of conservation efforts have helped the sharp-tailed grouse population grow enough to support the hunt. More information can be found on the Department of Natural Resources' sharp-tailed grouse hunting webpage. A Hayward man was sentenced to prison for bankruptcy fraud and criminal contempt of court last week. 74-year-old Bernard Seidling was sentenced to 7 years in prison and ordered to pay a $500,000 fine following a 4-day federal trial. He was accused of filing for bankruptcy in 2022 while hiding around $20 million in assets and $1 million in cash that he had stashed in a crawl space under his house. Seidling had reported just one bank account with a balance of less than $200 in the original bankruptcy filing. The Shell Lake Chamber of Commerce is inviting area residents to one of their biggest fireworks shows ever this week. The event will begin at 8 p.m. on Thursday with some live music and local vendors on Main Street. The fireworks show will start at around 10 p.m. and this year will include fireworks launching from three pontoon boats on the water. The live music will return after the fireworks show until around midnight. Organizers are recommending that residents settle anywhere along the beach and hillside in front of the pavilion for a good view of the fireworks. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. During a recent appearance at Fuel Fest, Vin Diesel said he recently spoke with a Universal executive who asked him if they could do another Fast and Furious film, to which the actor said yes, but on three conditions. The conditions were to return the filming to production-starved L.A., embrace the purity of street racing once again, and to have his buddy Paul Walker make an appearance in the film. Walker passed away in 2013 after a high-speed car crash at just 40 years old. Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez's $50 million wedding was the talk of the weekend, but the talk wasn't all good. Charlize Theron spoke during her fifth annual African outreach project in L.A. and said to the crowd, "I think we might be the only people not invited to the most talked-about wedding," at which point the Mad Max Fury Road star said, "That's okay because they suck and we're cool." Two very different events, but a lot less collagen and steroids at Theron's event. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, maybe a stray storm, a high in the mid-80s. And upper 80s on Thursday, another slight storm chance. A couple of storms around for the 4th of July and temps in the upper 80s and muggy. It's 82 right now.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olsen will join us to discuss breaking news as it continues on the state budget and in Washington. Plus, what's worse? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine co-host with me today. His name is James Santel. You can find his show, Amicus, a Law Review, on Saturday mornings across the network from 9 to 11. We're going to get to the Supreme Court big decision from last week. Thanks, Jim, for being in the chair on Friday to handle that puppy.
We knew it was coming, right?
Yes.
And I knew you were monitoring it, too. I was getting wonderful notes from you about what is this all about, right? As we're trying to digest hundreds of pages all of a sudden of material.
I can be camping and consuming massive amounts of Supreme Court decisions at the same time. I wanted to answer a quick question that came in from our friend Bob in Madison. Hey, Bob, thank you for listening. He texted in on the from WMDX. Again, if you have questions or comments, you can join us via phone or text at 855-752-4842. Again, that's 855-75-CIVIC. Bob, on the Wisconsin biennial budget passed today by the Joint Finance Committee, going to a full vote before the legislature tomorrow, Wednesday, asked this. The Wisconsin compromise budget bill sounds too good to be true. What's the catch? How did we get here? What's going on? And I think the lion's share of objection coming from Dems that I have seen on the Twitter, or what used to be known as the Twitter, et cetera, has been around public school education, that general school aids weren't increased, and we still have per pupil funding that basically lags inflation. So that has been a point of contention for a long time. And when we look at special education, again, State Senator LaTanya Johnson, joining us for the first segment of the day, pointed out that they have been able to increase the reimbursement rate for kids that are special needs or SPED, special education. If you're in the education field here in Wisconsin, they had been at 35%. Those are the reimbursement percentages. Mind you, our voucher schools are at a reimbursement rate, I believe, of 90%. So why are the public schools getting, for lack of a better term, you know, the pointy end of the stick when it comes to special education? Dems had been aiming at a 60% reimbursement rate. They negotiated up to 42% for the first year of the budget, 45% for the second year of the budget. That is a significant win. Again, that's a 10%, you know, a 10-point increase. They're still 15 short of goal, but like, yeah, that's what happens when you have a Republican-controlled legislature. So I think a lot of the angst is around that public school funding, but that has always been a point of contention. And frankly, if you zoom out and you look at the sorts of legislation that Republicans have been advocating for and frankly existentially advocating for since Ronald Reagan, their objective is the defunding of public education. So in any and every way that we can shore up those funds, especially for our kids that have the highest level of need, in other words, our special education students, that is a significant improvement. Not enough for some, but again, if you happen to be in a royal blue legislative district in this state and you get to just vote no because you'll never have to face constituents that really wanted the compromise, that's an easy no. It's those that represent the communities at greatest risk, those in leadership that are making these hard compromises and taking these hard votes.
And, you know, one of the other things that the senator hinted at, we didn't have a chance to go into it in great detail, was the future, right? And you asked a question about this as well. When you do these kinds of things, you send a message to those people, the naysayers, yes, but also the people who understand exactly the civics that we're talking about here today. It's also about the future. Here we have a situation where, again, not everybody happy with this resolution, lots of things you would have preferred to have gotten. But, again, we've got to get up. There'll be another budget cycle coming up all too soon. And maybe it begins to send the message that these pie-in-the-sky aspirations on both left and right simply will not stand. And maybe instead of doing this 48 hours before where we've got to have this all done, maybe we come to, in the wake of the listening sessions, come to some resolutions that are maybe closer to the middle, that great, wonderful middle where government probably should be. We do it in a way that acknowledges that this is government. This is the way it works. And it sends that message about the next time around as well.
And again, I have deep, basically reverential respect for Democrats that have to take these difficult votes. And they do so knowing that, frankly, arguing about harm reduction or harm avoidance is not a politically salient or easy path, that incremental improvements are not always the easiest political sell. But again, it really interesting time. Keep your eyes on what the state legislature does tomorrow. Again, once approved by the state legislature, the governor has 10 days. But keep in mind, keep your eye on the big, brutal bill in our U.S. Congress, because we need our budget before the U.S. Congress adopts the budget reconciliation bill, and it is signed by the president in order to maximally preserve Medicaid funding in this state. I just wanted to give us the chance and give our listeners a chance to weigh in on, to talk a bit about the birthright citizenship decision from Friday. And folks, there are looking to be some big decisions still coming down the pike. There's the 1849 abortion law opinion. That's coming from our state Supreme Court. Again, we're going to have the House and the U.S. Congress vote on the budget reconciliation bill because it's not the same as what they adopted back in May. So lots of things happening tomorrow. Keep your eyes on the news. I had so many reactions to the birthright citizenship case, which actually wasn't the birthright citizenship case that many thought it was. And the first one was, this was a case, and the majority clearly leaned into this quote-unquote technical interpretation or question that had been posed, and that is, can a district court issue a nationwide or universal injunction that materially impacts the rights of parties not before the court? And the majority in this decision that came down on Friday looked back to the way things used to be.
History once again. There it is. History and tradition. We've heard that before, haven't we, Maggie?
In the early times, and looking at bills of peace and all kinds of stuff, which we don't need to get into because it's hyper-technical, and to say, listen, district courts have a limited scope. And the idea that nationwide injunctions can reach the rights of non-parties when there may be other vehicles to do so is really interesting. There are problems with this, of course. That is basically what they were saying is go seek class actions. And there were a number of class actions about birthright citizenship and other matters immediately filed on Friday because, frankly, people expected this from this court. Hoped differently, but expected and had to plan for this eventuality. But to me, the much broader context here, Jim, is the fact that this court, the majority of this court, seems to a large degree to be both incapable of, unwilling to, and utterly either ignorant or willfully blind to the real harms that yes. are being acted upon people who do not have resources mm-hmm. and access. That is primarily what I see here. And so folks don't need to know what class actions are or nationwide injunctions. What the court did on Friday was say, you have to be able to go find a lawyer and potentially pay a lawyer in order to protect your rights. And I think that that is overarchingly challenging for us as a democracy in this moment, in this particular moment. Maybe 10 years ago, I wouldn't be so concerned about it. But in this moment, I think it's deeply concerning.
Absolutely. And you've got to be able to find that lawyer. You've got to be able to find the courthouse, which, again, the lawyers can do for you. Got to be able to articulate actually your particular harm. And then you've got to be a part of litigation that goes on. And that will happen now, as many people have said, in the wake of this multiple times across America. And, you know, it's so disappointing. I had this same reaction as you did, Maggie, as I'm reading through this and hearing about it, of course, on headlines. And we're on your show on Friday, quite literally, with the ink still wet on the yes. order. And I'm thinking aloud about the oral argument. And it sure seemed to me as if Amy Coney Barrett was getting at something, which is, again, as we talked about, even the budget, right? Right down the middle, right? She seemed to be articulating this view that maybe what the court needs to do, as difficult as this is linguistically and operationally, needs to articulate a rule. As you just said, there are these large mammoth issues out there having to do with things like constitutional rights that apply to every single person. And it seemed as if Amy Coney Barrett was saying, as to those, we can perhaps identify some categories, maybe describe them definitionally. Other things may not be in that large category. And so we define a rule that lower courts said, again, they will interpret it differently. We'll have to have more appeals on all that. This is not an easy question, right? And so sometimes this notion, and again, it's written by Amy Coney Barrett. It strikes me as the kind of thing Alito would write, which is this hard line, bright line test and this approach to litigation and to jurisprudence that permits of no gray areas, strikes me that this is one of those areas where the Supreme Court would have, again, with great criticism, I'm sure, heaped upon it, identify some considerations, as they sometimes do in voting rights cases, civil rights cases, that lower courts should address in deciding whether or not the particular order that I am entering should extend beyond the Eastern District of Wisconsin, should extend beyond these particular plaintiffs. How far should it go? And then you appeal that, right? But give us some latitude to make all that, right?
One, the court doesn't do that. They've seemed substantially disinclined to do that in any of these cases. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that many of these cases, and listen, Donald Trump has accessed the Supreme Court's emergency docket or shadow docket 19 times.
Since January 20th, right?
Correct. Outstripping the totals of basically every other presidency and doing so in the first four and a half months of his presidency, 6 months now of his presidency. This is the problem. Whatever you may think about immigration and its enforcement, immigration and the way that we treat people who may be here illegally is the canary in the coal mine for individual rights. And if you have a Supreme Court that is, one, making access to the courts to vindicate individual rights more expensive and more difficult, while they are constraining the powers of the courts to respond to overreach or outright lawlessness by a president and his or her administration, what you have then is the court very much leaning into itself as the weakest branch. Mm-hmm. And that works only when Congress is able to step up and check executive power, which brings me all the way back to the idea that this court has again and again, specifically in the gerrymandering cases, not acted to ensure that Congress remains truly representative of us, the people. And that is leading to this gross imbalance of powers. We're going to dive a little bit deeper on that. What do we do about this? What do we do next? What does it look like? And are Democrats always playing catch up? We discuss this next. Jim Santel and I, your host, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842. Text lines are open. Little problem with the phone line, so text in your thoughts and comments. We'll be back after these brief messages.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The U.S. Supreme Court decided in Buckley versus Valeo and Citizens United that unlimited money spent for campaigns equaled free speech and enabled the rise of super PACs, but it kept limits on certain types of spending by political parties. A case by Republicans heard in the High Court this fall tests those limits. While national political parties can make unlimited donations to a federal candidate, they are limited in what's called coordinated spending with a candidate. Such spending might include renting venues, sending mail, or most importantly, advertising. In 2025, those Federal Election Commission limits were up to $127,000 for a U.S. House candidate and up to $4 million for a U.S. Senate candidate, calculated by voting age population. The GOP has long chafed at those limits, set in 1971's Federal Election Campaign Act. Citizens United and subsequent cases drove corporations and special interest donors to contribute their billions to super PACs, with which candidates theoretically can't coordinate. The Roberts Court has a track record of money as free speech decisions. Whether this merely shifts billions from super PACs to the national parties or opens up yet another floodgate of special interest influence is yet to be seen. The case will be heard next term. We have more details on the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the university system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew,
this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here's what we've got right now. And I think if anybody from the Trump team had been candid with American voters back in October, September, or August, about what we're seeing right now, I don't think he wins. Because let's zoom out. We've got to see what the Supreme Court decided on Friday when it comes to these nationwide injunctions without reaching the merits of whether or not the 14th Amendment means what it says. Here's what we've got right now. We've got people being snatched off our streets by folks without identification with masks on. They disappear, sometimes for weeks on end. They don't have the right to call a lawyer. Some of them have been then deported to not their country of origin or their citizenship, but to some of the most dangerous places on planet Earth, where they fear further kidnapping, potential torture, without a hearing, apparently. We have an administration who has flouted multiple court orders to stop doing that. We have an administration that, according to many, has illegally deployed military to patrol our own streets to tamp down on a handful of people, creating chaos and destroying property. But worse happens when the Lakers win the championship, right? Like, all of this is happening. We're having elected officials taken down and handcuffed, elected officials arrested for doing what they considered to be their job and well within the bounds of their discretion.
And indicted by grand juries, apparently, right? We've got a congressman.
And indicted by grand juries. So importantly, today, relating to birthright citizenship, the government was required to tell a judge, hey, are babies about to be deported? I want you all to pause on that. Because the Supreme Court on Friday was more interested in the process of our court system and less interested in people's individual rights, babies can be deported. And the judge yesterday specifically asked the government lawyer, are you going to start deporting babies? Well, today, that judge's question was answered in writing by the U.S. government. And they said, starting on July 27th, babies may be deported. And I want you all to think about that. Again, the way that we treat folks accused of crimes, the way that we treat people who are here allegedly illegally, is certainly a canary in the coal mine. But consider this. Those whom citizenship is guaranteed under the 14th Amendment are facing deportation as babies in 26 days in the United States of America. Donald Trump, over the last 2 weeks and again today, has made noises about, quote, denaturalization and deporting people who are citizens. With what process? Who knows? But what I can tell you is the Supreme Court will be more worried about the process and the technicalities than they are with the substantive rights of American citizens. Again, these are canaries in the coal mine, and they are dying, folks. It is high time we pay attention to this. Now, the solution, we're not there yet with Congress. Slowly, maps are getting better, but again, the Supreme Court utterly unconcerned with that, apparently. So who is it left to stand up to a wannabe tin pot dictator? Guess what? It's you. And there is a direct line, in my opinion, from the increasing dissatisfaction across the United States in every district, including districts that used to be fairly ruby red. People are not okay with this. People are not okay with stripping citizens of their citizenship and deporting them to who knows where. Imagine a baby being deported whom days ago, you know, like on Thursday, was not subject to deportation. It's not supposed to be this way, and we all very much deserve better. So it's going to be up to each and every one of us. The courts will do some things. And to answer a question from our friend Ross in Crawford County, yes, federal district courts can still enter injunctions that specify the rights of the parties before them. And if the specification through a preliminary injunction or a temporary restraining order that is specifically tailored to provide complete interim relief to the parties before it does provide some relief to third parties within the jurisdiction of that district court, that's still good. That's why what Donald Trump and all of the MAGAs were saying on Friday were outright lies. Right. The Supreme Court didn't rule that he can strip birthright citizenship away. It simply dealt with the process to get there. But what that does anticipate is a flood of lawsuits across the country. And our courts are not equipped for that at their current size. So court reform is going to be necessary. The next thing that I'll share with you is that state attorneys general become incredibly important. Because where a state can articulate standing, a state, of course, is going to be able to litigate on behalf of its citizenry and taxpayers. So we need activist attorneys generals that are deeply concerned about their citizens' rights. Do we have one here in Wisconsin? Only time will tell. But most of all, this is about you. Is it okay for an administration to willy-nilly violate rights when no court can stop them nationwide, so says the Supreme Court? What if they came for your guns? What if they say that women don't get any federal benefits? Is that okay? I say not. We continue our discussion on the other side. Jim and I are going to dig into the big, brutal bill and its impacts in Wisconsin. Phone lines and text lines are open, 855-752-4840.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. On the second day of deliberations, the jury in the sex trafficking and racketeering trial of Sean Diddy Combs told the judge they reached a partial verdict. ABC News legal contributor Brian Buckmar has more on the jury's note about that partial verdict.
We have this note saying there's a partial verdict, saying that they have an unpersuadable opinion between them when it comes to that first count of racketeering conspiracy, but they have a verdict as it applies to the other four counts.
The judge, after consulting with attorneys, called jurors back into the courtroom, telling them to keep deliberating and, quote, to consult with one another and to deliberate with a view to reach an agreement. The judge left it up to jurors then to stay longer today or return tomorrow. The jury immediately sent back a note saying they would stop for the day and resume deliberations tomorrow. Earlier, the jury requested to review testimony from Combs' ex-girlfriend Cassie Ventura and a male escort. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin